So I grew up in London, and in London we have a sort of fabulous Lebanese area around the Edgware Road. So I was kind of knew about the food, but it was kind of the hero dishes. So your chicken shawarmas, your fattoush, your hummus. And I loved it and I wanted to know more. So I found out about a restaurant in Beirut that was basically had a very tight kitchen team of chefs. And then they were getting different cooks, home cooks from the different regions of Lebanon to come in and cook regional cuisine that you probably wouldn't find in the city. And I thought it sounded kind of interesting, reached out to them and they said, come and work for us. So that's what I did for a few weeks. And it was just bonkers because I got to experience like home cooking, which is always the best, you know, like it's always wonderful. But also I got to spend time in this incredible city that I'd only really heard quite kind of negative things about and utterly fell in love with it.
And so what did you know about Beirut before you went?
So, I mean, when I told my parents I was going, my mum was sort of saying, oh, you know, that's amazing. It used to be called the Paris of the East and it used to have this sort of very glamorous past. But obviously, because of conflict and civil war, you know, it's that's obviously not what it's known for anymore. So I kind of went with this quite kind of odd expectation of not really knowing what to expect, if I'm honest. I wasn't sure whether it was going to be like carnage or kind of classy. And actually, it was the city was kind of finding its feet back then, and things were sort of getting a lot calmer. It was a lot of things were sort of starting to develop and happen, like kind of restaurants and bars opening up, and you know, life getting back to normal. But it was fascinating being there, really, because you know when you've just heard so much about a place that's sort of negative, and then you get there and you're like, I don't understand, that's just not like this. And what made it for me were the people. They were just fabulous. They were so friendly and charming and welcoming and sort of so glad that people were there just to sort of experience, you know, their culture. It was really amazing.
And what was surprising about that to you?
What was surprising was that this city was so beautiful, so kind of contemporary, had this amazing population of people who just want it to kind of get back to where it was, and they were sort of so determined to make that happen. And I think that kind of resilience and spirit was amazing.
And what sort of role did food play in their lives? Was that very different than what you imagined as well?
So the food was so fabulous. Like in that part of the world, food is so important anyway. Like, you know, it's what people do. All, you know, you come together as a family and eat. It's just a massive part of people's lives. Everybody knows about food. Everybody knows about different dishes. You know, your wife or your mother or your auntie, well, it's all women who cook, will have, you know, different nuances of different dishes, and everybody has an opinion. And I absolutely love that, because we don't really have that so much where I come from. Like, people just kind of go, oh, I like a pizza, or I like to go and eat here. They wouldn't sort of say like, oh, my mum makes it like this and that's how I like it, or you should add more pomegranate molasses to this salad because that's how it should be. And I really kind of loved that everyone had a real opinion of the food. But also their cuisine is steeped in history as well, because it's sort of Lebanon originally was a Phoenician trading port. And the cuisine dates back thousands of years. So it's all quite layered, and things have got beautiful stories and history behind them, which I think is lovely.
And was that what you were hearing in that restaurant in Beirut that you were there for a couple of weeks? I think the owner was a man named Kamal. And as you said, inviting women from different regions to come and share their family recipes. Were you hearing the stories behind their food?
Yeah, and they were so wicked. They were like, you know, they had no idea that I was going to be there. And there's this sort of, I'm quite a sort of small, like, very British man getting very, very excited about what I was seeing. Kind of like, oh, my God, what's going on? How do you make this? What is this? So they were just loving it. And I, you know, I got so much access from these amazing women. And what was wonderful is when I went back to do this new book, I kind of tapped into all of those women. So instead of sort of meeting them in the restaurant, I went to where they lived. I went to their villages, went to their homes, and worked with them for you know, several days at a time to kind of really understand what was going on within their region, within their home, what they were growing on their farms. And it was absolutely stunning.
You're listening to John Gregory Smith. He's a chef and author of a new book called Saffron in the Souks. You're on Afternoons Today with me, Di Darmody, on ABC Radio Perth and across Western Australia. So what was different in that second trip for this book, say, you know, 8 years later?
So, the main thing that was different and that I was so lucky, really, was that the country is in just a much better place. It's much more stable. It's safe. And when I was there originally, everyone just said, stay in the city. Beirut's cool, but just stay here. Whereas this time round, everybody, and by that I mean just the people I was with, and you really trust the people you're with, were saying, go, just get in your car and go. So that's what I did. I hired a car. Off I went for 2 months and I drove around and just had the most incredible adventures. And I went, you know, all the way along the coastline, and it's Mediterranean coast. So it's stunning and amazing seafood, beautiful old towns with, you know, wonderful like old Roman and Phoenician ruins. And then I went into the mountains and they've got a mountain range in the middle with the most beautiful sort of like amazing forests and wonderful kind of little villages that have amazing, some are Christian, some are Arabic, some are Druze. So they've all got very different nuances of food. And then you have the wine region. And a lot of people don't know that Lebanon has a huge wine region called Bekaa Valley. And they grow fantastic plonk there. So, you know, like you'll be in these villages drinking amazing booze, eating amazing food. And again, thinking this is not what I expected here. So I just had the best time. I was very well looked after and learned so much about the cuisine, about the people and the culture. And it was just fascinating.
Are more people starting to do what you have just done? You know, everyday travellers and tourists, are they going there yet?
I think it is starting, yeah. So I've noticed quite a lot since I've been home, actually, people going out, certainly to Beirut, because from where I live, it's pretty quick. It's like a 4.5-hour flight. So you could do like a long weekend. And Beirut is getting its vibe back. I mean, it is cool. It is cultured. It's arty. It's clever. It's chic. And, you know, if you want a fun night out, it is the place to be. I mean, it's rocking.
Is it?
A lot of people, yeah. Oh, my God. The clubs, the restaurants, the bars. It's so glamorous and so cool. Like, it's a great place for a long weekend.
It just saying that out loud, don't you think, John? I'm going to Beirut for a long weekend.
It is nuts. Do you know what?
It is, isn't it?
So when I went there sort of on my second trip, I ended up in this amazing club called Garten, and it's beautiful, right on the harbour. And I was dancing till 10 in the morning. The sun was coming up and it was like, this is not what people expect about this city. It is so fun.
And you'll obviously go back there again. You're hooked. You were hooked from that first trip back in 2010.
Yeah, no, it's a lovely place. And there's some places in the north that I didn't get to go to in the northeast that I want to kind of go back to and explore. And I just love it. I think it's a great place to be.
Let's talk about the food then, because obviously that's the main reason you were there.
Yeah.
You mentioned the long history that Lebanon has with its food culture. And looking at your cookbook and just chatting to you now, it seems like the kind of cuisine that has a lot going on, I guess. And I know you've said they are very partial to the sort of sour tang. There's intricate uses of herbs and spices. So is it a complicated cuisine to try and replicate?
Do you know what? It's actually not. So the sort of the kind of principles of Lebanese cuisine is things are very subtly spiced, quite sort of sharply flavoured with sourness. So pomegranate, molasses, lemons or sumac, which is a lovely red berry that they kind of crush. But they don't tend to have like masses of flavours happening all at once. It's everything's quite fresh and light and I think that's kind of what sets it apart from maybe some of its neighbours.
You mentioned some of the recipes that we may know. Hummus, of course, is probably the one that springs to mind for a lot of people. What were the recipes that you wanted to capture in this book to get people to try, I guess?
So, I mean, like let's talk about hummus quickly. I mean, it's utterly divine and dreamy and creamy and lovely. And they do it very, very well over there. And it was, you know, it's a treat to eat. But what I kind of love to know is like what would a mum in the mountains in Lebanon cook her kids on a Wednesday night? And I just sort of have that. I find it fascinating. Like, what would they cook? You know, at home, my mum might have cooked us like spaghetti bolognese or fish fingers. And they, one of the dishes that I found was this in a little village called Jezzine, which was high in the mountains, and it was beautiful. It had a waterfall. It was on a sort of cliff, had a waterfall spilling through the middle of the village. It was like something from Lord of the Rings. And this lovely woman who I was staying with was making me all these very elaborate dishes. And then I sort of said, like, what are you going to cook your family for dinner tonight? And she was like, oh, you won't want to know. And I was like, I really do want to know. And she made this incredible lamb and okra stew. So okra is like a little sort of green, crunchy vegetable. And it was just very simple, some onions and lamb and okra, and seasoned very well, cooked with tomatoes, and then just a good squeeze of pomegranate molasses. And that sort of sweet, sour tang just melted through it. And it was just divine, like such simple, clever food, you know, like a lovely family meal to have on a, you know, cool winter night. And I just loved that. And it was called a yukni, which means stew. And I noticed actually the more I traveled, because it was in spring, it could get a little bit cold. You know, everywhere I went, different mums would have their own version of that stew.
Okay.
And I loved that. I thought that was really cute. It was really nice.
So the thing that would change might be the protein they used, or maybe the vegetable or the spices.
Exactly. And it's sort of the base was always like a sort of tomato base with pomegranate. And then what would go in would be different, or perhaps how they would serve it. Would it be with rice or bread? And I just loved that. I thought it was fab. And the other thing they do very well there is vegetables. So they, you know, meat is, you know, it's a luxury, and you don't eat it for every meal, but they just do amazing vegetables over there. So things like lovely roasted cauliflowers, beautiful stewed beans with tomatoes, and those are the kind of sort of main elements of lots of meals. So you always have like lots of different dishes on the table for everyone to tuck into.
Yeah, so that sharing kind of way of eating, isn't it?
Yeah, which is so lovely if you think about it, because it's like, what is nicer than a huge table with tons of dishes, bottles of wine, all your friends and family around, everybody just tucking in? And actually that's a real sort of standard over there. That's such a lovely way to eat.
Because it's something, I guess, that in Australia anyway, has, you know, these share plates. It's kind of the modern thing to do now.
Yeah.
Go out and, you know, sit with some friends and argue over which things you're going to have and are there enough of them on the plate?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Have I taken too many sort of thing?
Yeah, no, agreed. I think it's a really lovely way to eat. And generally those kind of dishes as well, everything looks really beautiful and garnished really nicely. And, you know, lots of bread to share. And it's a nice sort of interactive way to eat as well. And, you know, I think it's a beautiful way to sort of have a meal.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to John Gregory Smith, and we're talking about his latest cookbook, Saffron in the Souks. It's all about recipes from the heart of Lebanon. We're learning a lot about that country, as well as its cuisine, on Afternoons Today on ABC Radio Perth. So the book you have decided, is it about those sort of everyday recipes, or are there some of those special kind of things as well?
Yeah, so actually the way I would describe the book is it's probably not like the Bible of Lebanese cuisine. It's actually it's sort of a snapshot of what is happening in the country right now. And by that I mean that there's cuisines in there that are very traditional Lebanese. There's lovely home cooking, there's meze, but then because of where Lebanon is and what's happening around it, there's a lot of refugees. There's like Palestinian refugees, Syrian refugees, Armenians, and those cuisines have now sort of infiltrated into the sort of Lebanese psyche of dishes. And I've got some of them in there as well, because actually you will find them whether you're eating out or you're at home. People just, that's, you know, food and cultures mix. So it's a really nice snapshot of what's happening in the country. And what I tend to do, I think because of, you know, my family would, they're the best like road testers, basically. If I give them a really complicated recipe, they're like, nah, not going to do this. So I tend to sort of strip things back a little bit and make them nice and simple so that people can make them very easily at home.
And is it easy enough to find the ingredients, you know, say, for instance, here in Perth or Western Australia? Or are there things that will be in the recipes that we don't know exist?
Majority of them you will be very kind of comfortable with. I mean, you guys have the most amazing produce here, like the vegetables, herbs, or, you know, you guys have nailed it. You've got it all. The spices aren't anything complicated. The only thing that they have that can be a bit challenging to find is a spice called a spice mix that they have called Seven Spice. And as it sounds, it's a mix of seven spices. So it's like black pepper, allspice. And that if you can't find it, and I've sort of said this quite a lot throughout the book, there's nothing worse than a recipe where you can't get an ingredient, is you just substitute it and use allspice. And allspice is a berry that has this incredible sort of flavour that literally smells and tastes like allspice. So you can just swap it out for that. So, you know, you won't get caught out.
In your book, you also talk about how people eat, and they say, now I don't know that I'll pronounce this correctly, so please help me.
Go on.
Sautéine?
Yeah, exactly. So
okay.
It's called sautéine.
Sautéine.
And it's such a lovely sentiment, and it basically means like good health. But the way it's used in Lebanon is like if you came round to mine to eat and you were just about to tuck in, I would say sautéine to you. And or if you're like on the street and, you know, you've got like an amazing kebab or burger or whatever you've just bought, and you're, you know, that kind of moment of utter joy when you're just about to tuck in, if someone sees you, they'll say it to you, sautéine, because it's sort of like, oh my god, I know you're gonna have the most amazing eating experience right now, so enjoy it. And it's such a lovely sentiment, I think, and it sort of sums up the way they feel about food over there. They feel very passionate about it.
And a good reminder, because sometimes, I know, I'll put my hand up here, just sort of wolfing your way through it, you know, on the run, busy or whatever it is. And a reminder to say, you know, this is going to be delicious and I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. Even if it's a little sandwich at your desk for lunch, get a good one and enjoy it.
Sautéine is my new favourite word. Gillian O'Shaughnessy, who usually presents the afternoon program but is flitting off in Europe somewhere, we're not speaking about her at the moment. She actually took your cookbook home and has tried a couple of things. She is addicted, she told me, to the whole roasted halloumi and citrus salad.
Amazing. It's so good. It's lovely. It's so obviously, you know, you guys, everyone knows halloumi, the most amazing melty cheese
squeezy,
in the world.
Squeaky cheese.
So good. Exactly. But I've discovered this way of cooking it in a restaurant where they basically pan fried a block of it. So you get a lovely crispy coating on the bottom. Then you flip the cheese over and bung it in an oven for about 20 minutes. And the whole thing turns into this sort of molten, oozy, gooey glory. And just because it's quite salty and rich, just with a very light orange salad, is just heaven.
See, that could be really lovely at this time of year. It's just started to get cold here, but our citrus is coming into its own. And the other one that she really liked is, and has been making a lot, she said, Kebab King Chicken Shawarma.
Yes, yes, yes. It is so good.
Three yeses.
So So chicken shawarma is like one of the big hero dishes of Lebanese cuisine. And it's a very sort of juicy, deliciously spiced chicken kebab. But the sort of secret special element that the Lebanese do is when you go to the kebab shop, they will, where the sort of the meat is rotating and charring, they will put underneath it sort of crispy deep fried chips, and the chips absorb all the flavor of the meat, and then that in a wrap is like extra flair, extra flavor and extra texture. And it's just such a clever addition. So I've kind of slightly adapted it to make it very easy to just cook in a recreational oven, but it's just this sort of carb on carb unctuous lovely soft thing in this kebab. It's just dreamy.